listening to New England Public Radio News. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is the shortlist NEPR's Week in Review. And with us today, Dave Eisenstatter, editor of the Valley Advocate, and Mike Dobbs, managing editor of the Reminder Newspapers. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Adam.
Good to be here.
We start this week on Beacon Hill. The husband of Amherst Democratic State Senator Stan Rosenberg, Brian Hefner, was indicted on charges including sexual assault and criminal lewdness. It's the latest in a scandal that has seen Rosenberg step away from the Senate presidency as the Senate investigates whether Hefner had any influence over Rosenberg when it came to Senate business. So Dave, Rosenberg says he believes the justice system will fairly handle these felony charges against his husband. What should Rosenberg's next move be?
You know, I mean, a lot of other politicians have stepped down at this point in their careers. I'm really going to be looking at the Senate's review, their ethics review. I think it's time that they start speeding that up and getting that out to people. We've already had a Boston Globe expose on that Rosenberg had shared email or had offered his password to Brian Hefner. There's also a candidate running against Rosenberg. Chelsea Klein of Northampton just announced her candidacy against him. This is what's been described as the year of the woman. There are women candidates running for open seats all over the region.
Mike, it's been a rough few months for the Massachusetts Senate. In addition to the Rosenberg-Hefner scandal, there's been a tussle over the Senate presidency. Brian Joyce, a former senator, is charged with taking bribes, among other things, in federal court. And another state senator from Brockton, Michael Brady, was charged with drunk driving last week. What kind of example are they setting, and how are they doing in the lawmaking department with all of this going on?
Well, I think in this day and age, we really don't look to elected officials for setting any sort of moral or ethical example any longer. I do think that we want results from our legislature. We're in sort of a lull right now. And so I get press releases from our various members of our delegation that certain things are being passed and they're going on to the House for reconciliation. I don't really get the sense that all of this is affecting necessarily legislation that needs to be passed, that there's an urgent need necessarily. I do think that it does speak to the element of human frailty and that anybody who believes that elected officials are immune from it are wrong.
Meanwhile, in Springfield, a controversy has erupted over a church granting sanctuary to a Peruvian woman and her American-born children as she faces deportation. Democratic Mayor Dominic Sarno came out against this, saying he was going to send in code enforcement officials to inspect the church, and he wants to take away its nonprofit status. Sarno, who has said in the past Springfield is not a sanctuary city, was then blasted by city councilor and state Senate candidate Adam Gomez, who called him Mayor Trump. Sarno's spokesperson declined comment on that. Mike, mayors in other cities in Massachusetts have come out strongly in favor of using sanctuary and not cooperating with the feds in many types of immigration cases, but Sarno hasn't. Why do you think that is? Politically speaking, is there a constituency he's trying to play to here?
I think the mayor is very concerned about losing federal aid. Now, there has been all those rumblings in the Trump administration about we're going to pull federal aid from those cities that call themselves sanctuary cities. And just so folks know, the term sanctuary city almost is a phrase that means what it means for individual communities. There's no one legal standard for the phrase sanctuary city. Springfield is not a sanctuary city. No one has ever declared it. No one has ever advocated for it. This is the instance of a group of churches that have banded together to form an organization that if somebody needed sanctuary, they would agree to consider the case. This is the very first case. Frankly, I think the mayor is sort of overreacting on all of this. And if this was an election year for him, he might find that this would be a talking point for a candidate who is running against him.
Dave, in response to all of this, the Springfield City Council next week is expected to take up an order which would prohibit city employees from taking any action against the church granting sanctuary. What do you think about this move?
This is something that goes back centuries, churches offering sanctuary to those who need it, who are seeking being shielded from persecution. This is something that this is the realm of what these religious institutions feel like they ought to be doing. And it seems like that's where it should end from the city's point of view.
Mike? What do you think about that, the idea that the city councils may try to step in here and tell city employees not to do anything to this church?
Well, again, I think the city council can say anything that they want to say as individuals or vote on something as a body. It doesn't necessarily going to translate into prohibiting legally someone from a building inspector to go into South Congregational Church and look at this apartment that this woman is living in.
And in Amherst, Massachusetts this week, the town meeting is going to be a thing of the past. Voters there approved a change to a 13-person town council instead of the town meeting. Some proponents say that the town meeting isn't very efficient, with 240 elected members meeting in two sessions that often take several weeks to complete. Opponents say the town meeting was necessary to protect the town from, among other things, big money and development interests. Dave, what do you think about this change?
Gosh, it's such a difficult thing. People really love their town meeting. They love the the representation. They love knowing more of the people who are representing them in government. At the same time, it is a very inefficient way of going about things. Particularly, Amherst is one of those communities that really does look over every single article in their town meeting. Not every town does that. And to have that sort of inefficient way of doing things, you know, the town has made up its mind. I think that right now we're going to have to see how it all shakes out. My hope is that the constituencies that weren't very well represented by town meeting, including some of the people of color, are represented in this new 13-person council, and that the board really does reflect what the town looks like.
Mike, what do you think about this change?
I think it's realistic, and I understand, especially since we cover several communities with town meeting, how important it is for people to feel that this is part of a representative democracy. I get all that, but government is tough. Applying for grants, dealing with state mandates, all of the aspects of modern state and federal government are very, very difficult these days. You need people who can focus on this stuff, and you need people who can react to it. And the Amherst model is not designed for either one of them.
All right, Mike Dobbs of the Reminder Newspapers and Dave Eisensetter of the Valley Advocate, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And thank you, our loyal listeners of The Shortlist, NEPR's Week in Review. And remember, you can catch us at any time wherever you get your podcasts or at nepr.net/podcast. I'm Adam Frenier, and this is New England Public Radio.